keep working, keep doing a good job. Know that America still has a dire shortage of nurses and could greatly use your talents.
Welcome to Nursing in America, where nurses share real stories of building new lives in the U.S. with practical tips to help you thrive.
Hello, everybody. I am your host, Danielle Friedman, talking to you bright and early from sunny San Diego, California. And today we have breaking news. We have the October Visa Bulletin. We are very, very excited for today. We are going to be bringing out our legal experts to take all of your questions. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Chris. Thank you both for being on. Let's take a quick moment just to do some introductions. Mike, why don't we start with you?
Yes, my name is Mike Cammon. I'm an immigration attorney based in Cincinnati. I've been doing healthcare immigration cases for about 25 years.
Well, we look forward to taking advantage of your 25 years of experience with all of our questions, Mike. Chris, let's go to you next.
Yeah, right. Great. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Danielle. I'm happy to see everybody. I'm Chris Masilla. I'm an immigration attorney as well, just not quite as old as Mike.
Well, we're excited to take advantage of both of your experiences. So let's get started. Mike, can we start with you? Can you give us the update? What happened in the October Visa Bulletin?
Yes. So we saw some forward movement. I'm one of these people that never has enough. So it did not move as far forward as I would have liked. But nonetheless, we did see some forward movement in all of the categories when we're looking at, you know, a couple key things that I look at in the October Visa Bulletin is what did we move year over year? So if we go back to a last October's 2024 bulletin, how far did we move? And on the final action date chart, we moved about 4.5 months forward year over year. The date for filing right about 4 months. Date for filing moved forward a couple of months for the rest of the world and Philippines. EB2 saw some movement forward for those of you that are allied professionals that might be in that category. One interesting thing for individuals from the Philippines is that the dates, final action date chart matched up again with the rest of the world, where there had been some separation for several of the last 5 or 6 bulletins, and now they're back to the same. So I think from the Filipino perspective, that's probably a fairly positive thing. But it certainly did not move in any kind of earth-shattering way. Final action date, particularly if we're not looking year over year, but just looking for month to month, you know, we saw movement from the Philippines, but not movement for the rest of the world. So somewhat frustrating, but at least forward.
Okay, so we saw some forward movement in 3 of the 4 categories that we had up there. Is that right, Mike?
Yes.
And then rest of world, we didn't see movement.
Right. It's the same as September on the final action date for filing move forward.
Chris, was there anything you'd like to add about that? Did that surprise you at all?
I mean, no, it didn't really surprise me. I think when we talked about this, I don't know if it was last month or the months before, Mike and I were both of the opinion that we would see a movement, something like this. I mean, I think it was a little bit unusual that the Philippines and the rest of the world are back together again. Wouldn't surprise me if they separate slightly. I think the real headline I take from it, which is really just reiterating something that Mike said, is the chart B, which is called the dates of filing chart. It is 01 July 2023, which is about a 12-week movement from the chart A, which is April 1st, 2023. So again, we've got April 1, 2023, which is the chart A, and we've got July 1st, 2023. That spread is about 12 weeks. There's about 12 months in a year. And so I know we're going to get these questions. What do we think? What do we predict? I'm here to give you the headline. I predict, and I expect Michael feels roughly the same way, we're going to see roughly for every calendar month, we're going to see about a 1 week movement in the EB3 number, although I do expect it will be bumpier than that. So we might see no movement for a little while and then a jump. Maybe we see no movement for 3 weeks and then a 3 week jump in chart A, and then another no movement for 2 months and then another 2 week movement. But by and large, I think over the course of this fiscal year, which will run until, you know, September of 2026, we would expect on average, chart A should be moving about a week or so for every real life calendar month.
Okay. Thank you, Chris, for that insight and those thoughts and predictions. Mike, anything to add on what you think the rest of the year could look like?
I think that I would 100% agree with Chris that we tend to look at the date for filing as a predictor of what the year would get to. And that's a pretty short span there of only like 3 months that we think we're going to see movement for the rest of this fiscal year, which is, you know, not very much. I think there were a lot of us that were hoping we would get, you know, maybe to the end of 2023 by the end of the year, by the end of the next fiscal year, not calendar year, but it doesn't look like we're going to get anywhere close to that.
So can you explain a little bit more of why you say that, Mike? So I think I understand based on the date for filing chart and why you think it's only going to move a certain amount of months, but can you explain a little bit more?
Yeah, so what they try to do with that date for filing chart is predict how many visas they're going to be able to issue during the course of the year and allow people to file in such a time that allows the two government agencies, the Department of State through all of its consulates around the world, and the USCIS through the 45 process, to adjudicate the case during this fiscal year. So they want to give them enough time. For example, here in the USCIS, here in the States, for people who file 45s, many even go through personal interviews, and that's expected to increase. So they want to be able to give enough time to allow filing, but adjudication. There's no reason from their perspective to allow a lot of people to file when they know they cannot adjudicate them in the course of the year. So we've historically seen that as a predictor. Now, that doesn't mean that that date is locked in place. It can certainly move as the year goes on. Historically, it has not moved very much. I think last year we did see a movement of a month or so near the end of the third quarter fiscal year wise of last year's date for filing charts. We got a little forward movement, but not much. So we generally see that what do we look like by the end of next fiscal year? So if we're sitting here September of 2026, we're going to say that we're still not approving cases who have priority dates in, say, October, November, December of 2023. Those guys are still sitting here on hold, which puts those guys at then much, much closer to 3 years, three plus years.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. That's very helpful. I do see a couple of questions about what is the filing date. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of you who are watching. You may be joining us for the first time. So thank you for joining us. We are going to go back to the basics. We want to explain what do all of these things mean? Priority date, filing date, date for filing, final action, lots of terms. So we're going to go back to the basics. But before we do that, I just wanted to address one thing. I think I saw this comment from Arati. Arati says, it's so frustrating, even October visa bulletin didn't show any movement for rest of world. So while it might be very exciting for those who are under the Philippines to have seen some movement, if you are under rest of the world, it might feel very frustrating and very upsetting to have not seen a lot of movement. We expected the October visa bulletin to show a lot of movement, or at least we hoped. And to not see that movement can probably feel very frustrating and very upsetting. So I wanted to give, you know, Chris and Mike, you've seen a thing or two. What would you say to Arati and anybody else who might be feeling, you know, just down and just upset about the lack of movement in this year reset? Chris, words of advice?
First of all, of course, if you had expected a big jump in either Philippine, well, you got a modest jump in Philippine EB3, but if you'd been expecting a big jump in rest of the world EB3, unfortunately, you know, you see where the dates are. And, you know, as Mike and I said, we're only expecting 12-week movement over the next 12 months. Could it be 16 weeks? Sure. But it's probably not going to be a six-month movement. So I think the first thing is to really understand the chart movement. And so if you have a priority date that is, I don't know, summer of 2024 or early 2025, I think the first thing is, unfortunately, you need not to get your hopes up, because the reality is you are not going to be current this fiscal year. barring a legislative change or something dramatic like that. So the idea of going to the State Department's website and constantly clicking refresh in the hopes of the visa bulletin, I just don't think that's a healthy idea, because you're going to be disappointed. And so you can do is continue to just control what you can control, which is something that we often say here, right, Danielle, which is keep working, keep doing a good job. Know that America still has a dire shortage of nurses and could greatly use your talents, but don't continually refresh the visa bulletin hoping for a day that's not going to come. On the other hand, if your priority date is the summer of 2023, I think you've got a decent shot at some point, but I still probably wouldn't go out there and just click refresh every day. The visa bulletin is going to come when it comes. And so since you can't control it, I don't think that's probably a good use of your time and effort.
I have to 100% agree, Chris. We do say a lot on the show, control what you can control. Something else that I've always thought, if you are watching, is that retrogression does not mean that you won't come. It just means that there will be a delay in how long it will take you to come. And we will get you here. You will get here. You can see there is movement. It might be modest. It might be more than. We have our fingers crossed, but you will get here. So if this is your dream, continue on your path. Do the things that you can control. Take your NCLEX. Take your English exam. Gain more experience. Be the best nurse that you can so that when you do touch down in the United States, you can flourish and grow in your nursing career. Mike, I'm going to turn to you. Any words of advice for our nurses who may be watching, Arati, who is feeling frustrated? Anything to add?
Well, I think there's two things that I would say. First of all, I tend to have my greatest disappointments when my expectations are not set well. And so I think that one of the things that can help us is by setting the proper expectations as to what we think is going to happen. And again, as Chris mentioned, barring any legislative relief, we're going to see slow movement this year. So that should be our expectation. Second thing is, I think that these dates and the idea behind them of how much time we have to go now can create some clarity for us when we're making career decisions. So for those of you who are looking at, can I take a one-year assignment in Australia or a two-year assignment in Canada or Dubai or wherever? I think that this gives you some pretty clear picture of what the dates are going to look like for the U.S. within the next several years, and can give you some perspective in being able to say, hey, I can take that assignment, or I can if you're close. If you're, you know, summer or fall of 2023, probably can't take a two-year assignment. But if you're in 2024, you probably can. So I think to some degree that may be able to help us a little bit, but frustrating is definitely a fair phrase. An analogy I use all the time with people waiting for retrogression is that it's a little like college. College takes a long time, whether it's a two-year program, four-year program, or grad school, and now we're looking at 6 years, or you guys that are really, you know, going on to school beyond that. And everything that you go through leads you to where you ultimately want to go. And we can't speed up college. We can't speed up grad school. We just have to get through it in order to achieve our final goal. And I think retrogression is like that. None of us on this call can control retrogression. We'd like to, but we can't. So just waiting until we get through that is probably a good idea.
You know, I like the analogy, Mike. It's a little bit like college. I have an analogy of my own that I use often. It's kind of like a deli line. Your priority date is your ticket in the deli line. Everybody's hungry. Everybody wants to come to the front. Everybody wants to get their sandwich, i.e. American dream. As long as you have that ticket, as long as you have that priority date, that place in line, you will get that spot in the front. You will reach that American dream. You will get that deli sandwich. So it's really just about doing what you can do to control your journey and propelling yourself forward. So thank you both for the advice. Let's turn back to the basics. So Chris, can you explain what is the visa bulletin and why was the October visa bulletin this month so important to us?
About every month, usually around the second week of the month. So the idea that came out last Friday is fairly standard. And there's the dates printed on it. And of course, we have countries up the top, and we have the EB 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, including some of the subcategories under the EB 3 along the left axis there. And so you see a whole grid of dates, and occasionally you'll see the letter C, and that it means current. And very occasionally, you'll even see the letter U, which means unavailable. And so what you want to do is, first thing you want to do is you want to say to yourself, what is the process through which my green card is proceeding through? And in the employment bank context, for probably everybody listening to this, there's two different pathways. So the first pathway, which is for all occupations except for physical therapists and registered nurses, those folks have to have what is called a PERM application, Form 9089, filed and approved. And then they have to go to the second stage, which is called an I-140. And then the third and final stage, they have to wait. And the third and final stage is the interview stage. And if your interview takes place overseas, we refer to that third stage as consular processing, because you are processing for your interview at a U.S. consulate. And if you are domestically in the United States, perhaps you're here as a student or some other status, H-1B, what have you, then your interview takes place in the United States. And so that third stage, and instead of being called consular process, your interview is called an adjustment of status. Why? Because your prior status, student status, H-1B status, is being adjusted to green card status. So again, PERM, I-140, interview. Those are your three stages. The PERM process, for everyone who's not a physical therapist or a registered nurse, the date that your PERM case is filed, that establishes your personal priority date. So if you're a medical technologist and you're in the United States, maybe you're on an H-1B, and your U.S. employer files your case today, September 15, your personal priority date would be September 15, 2025. And then all you need to do is you need to look at that chart every month. And at some point, let's pretend you're EB3 and you're, say, from the Philippines, when that date becomes later than September 15th, 2025, you will be able to move past the second stage and into the third stage, which is to say you will be able to have your interview set up. And the only difference is if you're a physical therapist or a nurse, you do not have to go through that PERM stage. You are on a what we call Schedule A, which essentially means you don't have to go through the PERM stage. And so you started the I-140, and so your priority date is established not from the date of the filing of your PERM, but from the date of the I-140. So your priority date, if you are a nurse and your petition was filed today, again, September 15th, 2025, same process. You continue to look through. So the first thing you want to do is you want to figure out what your priority date is, depending on whether you're a PERM case or whether you're a Schedule A case. Then once your I-140 is approved, you can even see on that approval notice up in the top left corner, it will say priority date. And then you just look at your country of birth, which is a key component of this. So we're talking about Philippines. If you're Filipino, but let's pretend you have moved to Canada and even become a Canadian citizen, which you were born in the Philippines, whatever country you're born on, your priority date stays with that country. In most instances, there's exceptions to almost everything. The most common one there would be if you marry a non-Filipino, you can choose whichever is the more favorable country of birth. But again, broadly speaking, priority dates, and then look at the visa bulletin, and that will give you a sense as to how quickly your case is going to move through the process.
Okay, thank you, Chris. So I think if I understand you correctly, the priority date is your ticket in line. That's the date that's established when your I-140 is filed, correct?
That's right.
Then what you use that date to look at the visa bulletin, and the visa bulletin puts out from USCIS which dates are eligible to come up and get a visa. So with that in mind, Mike, can you explain to us what is retrogression? What is this word that we keep using, this big R word, and why does it matter?
Yeah, so it's a very nasty word. It would be, for those of us who are really, really old, part of George Carlin's bit by these days. But basically, it just means that there are more people in line. The supply is less than the demand. So a line has formed because the U.S. government has decided only a certain number of immigrant visas or green cards can be given out per year. And that number has been static for a long time. And since there's more individuals, more demand from U.S. employers, and more demand from talent, international talent around the world that would like to come to the U.S. and work here, that creates a line. So it is that retrogression simply means a line is formed and there is a line. That's really all it means.
Okay, so it doesn't mean that you won't come. It just means that there's a delay.
Correct.
If you are inspired today to reach your American dream, please apply on our website. That link is amnhealthcare.com/international. And our recruiters are on hand, ready and waiting to help you process your application and reach your American dream. Let's shift gears a little bit. So we've been getting a lot of questions about the TN visa, especially for Mexican citizens. What are the immigration pathways for Mexican RNs to come to the United States?
Mexican RNs is something that we've really seen grow in the last few years. Mexico is part of the USMCA, or what used to be called the NAFTA trade agreement, which is a trade agreement between Mexico, the U.S. and Canada. And so Mexican nationals who have passed the U.S. NCLEX exam, who hold a proof of pass of that exam, or even in some instances have a U.S. nursing license, who have passed an English fluency exam, and who have went to a college that is equivalent to an American college as adjudicated by a visa credentialing organization, which I'll talk about in a minute. And lastly, who, if they have a Mexican nursing license, that license is unencumbered, which essentially means there's no black marks or listed on their license. If they meet those four standards, again, NCLEX, English fluency, U.S. equivalent college, and no black mark on their record, they are eligible for the trade NAFTA visa, the TN visa, which means they just need to go to their embassy, prove all of those, prove a U.S. job offer, so they should work with their U.S. employer, and without any quota, they can enter the United States and begin working for a U.S. Health system or staffing company, as the case may be. So it can happen pretty quick. I did mention about this visa credentialing organization. There are visa credentialing organizations in the United States. The most prominent one is CGFNS. There's also Joseph Silney's organization down in Florida. And they can issue these visa credential certificates, which you will need to bring to the embassy.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. So, Mike, Tina is asking, my I-140 application was filed in the first week of September, and I would like to ask how long it usually takes to know the priority date. I am still waiting for an update for my case manager.
Okay, so I'm assuming that unless you have a earlier I-140 priority date to recapture, that your case was not filed under premium, which means that your case was filed under regular processing, which is normal for RN cases these days. And receipts are being issued anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. They're just mailed to the attorney that filed, and then that attorney will in turn communicate it to your case manager, who will give it to you. So if you filed the first week of September and you do not have a receipt number yet, I would say that is normal. It is likely that there is no receipt number that's been issued yet. So that would not be unusual. And the processing time on your case is now they're up to about 18 months. Keep in mind, Chris mentioned earlier that you get your priority date, your spot in the queue when your case is filed. So the processing time itself is fairly irrelevant to the overall goal of you getting here to the U.S.
Okay, so there is some advice for you, Tina. That priority date is established the date that you file. So hang tight. Sounds like it's normal processing, and you should hear back soon, hopefully. Okay, so Chris, we're going to take a question from Ike. Ike says, I've been current since June, still no interview date from Nigeria Embassy. What do you think could be the cause for the delay? Have you seen a lot of delays at different embassies in getting interview dates?
Yeah, so that's not that unusual. Over the summer, because the visa fiscal year, the U.S. fiscal year is nearing the end, it's not uncommon, even when folks are current, that some of the embassies just don't schedule because they don't want to schedule you for a visa interview if you're not going to be current at the time that they are currently processing visa interviews. That's number one. Number two, the embassies don't move that fast. And so if you were current June, I don't know, 15th or something like that, they are not on June 16th often going to contact you and schedule the appointment. There is still an administrative process that has to go on at the embassy. They have to do background checks. They have to have enough visa officers who can do your appointment. So they have to do a variety of things like this. Sometimes they even have to get a file from the National Visa Center, which thankfully is mainly electronic now, but can still take some time. So I would not view 2 or 3 months as anything at all unusual. My guess is if you're current, you will be getting a visa appointment for an interview in the next few months, certainly before the end of the year. And one other thing, certain embassies are notoriously backlogged and behind. Unfortunately, we see some of the sub-Saharan African embassies are very much backlogged. And so that's not an issue about you or your employer or anything like that. That's just the U.S. government doesn't have enough staff to hold these interviews. Having said all that, I would absolutely contact your employer and or your attorney to see if they can give some insight into your particular case.
Okay, thank you, Chris. So Ike, hopefully that's some good information there that can help you. Okay, so Mike, we are going to take another question from the chat. So Lee Tan says, I am in the U.S., was approved I-140. I'm in the U.S. with an approved I-140, waiting for my adjustment of status. My priority date is now current in the date of filing. What will be the next step in the process?
Okay, so sounds like he's not filed an I-45 yet. He's current in the date for filing. The USCIS has posted that they will accept the date for filing chart for 45 filings in October, which means that he can go ahead and file his 485 in October, and he should reach out to his case manager. I'm assuming he's at the same employer that sponsored his I-140. Right now, and presumably working on an H-1 or some other visa status, F-1 or something here in the U.S. that makes them legal. So there's a variety of issues that would have to be checked off that we just don't know the information on. But in theory, he should be able to file his 485 in October.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. So Chris, I see we have a question from Christine. Christine is asking, are there bills or proposed legislation currently in Congress aimed at reducing or fixing the backlog? How long usually do these proposed bills take to be fully enacted? Are there any updates, and can you maybe give some background as to what Christine is referring to?
Right. So last week in the U.S. Congress, the Healthcare Workforce Resilience Act was offered into both the Senate and the House, which are the two government bodies that any bill needs to pass both the Senate and the House before it goes to the president's desk. The bill is very similar to prior iterations of the HWRA from, this is the third time they have introduced it. The U.S. Congressional cycle is on 2-year terms. It was first introduced in the 21-22 term, and then the 23-24 term, and now it's been introduced in the 25-26 term. It has historically broad bipartisan support, which is to say the two major U.S. political parties, Democrats and Republicans, supporting this. So that's all the good news. It's been introduced in the Congress. The bad news is two of the hardest areas to get legislation passed in the American Congress are immigration and healthcare, and this attempts to try and do both of those things. So it is going to be very difficult to pass. The bill would more or less eliminate the retrogression by injecting 25,000 immigrant visas that could only be used for nurses. There's another component of it for doctors, but 25,000 immigrant visas just for nurses, although it wouldn't actually raise the quota. What the bill does is it seeks to recapture some older immigrant visas that have been authorized by Congress, and indeed that means those numbers should have been used in prior years, but for mainly administrative and bureaucratic reasons, they were not used. So it's a one-time. My expectation is for probably 2 or so years, we would see little to no retrogression, and then we would be back where we are. So it's by no means a permanent situation, but it could at least provide an avenue for U.S. patients to get access to international nurses for the next couple of years. The bill is the bill. There's no timeline. That's not really how it works. Likely the bill is a small enough bill that it would probably be packaged with a lot of other bills. How exactly that transpires over the next few weeks and months is difficult to say. I would say probably the next window that it might go is the end of this calendar year, so something like December. But even then, putting any sort of timeline on this is extraordinarily extraordinarily difficult. Having said all that, the good news is it has been introduced, and it's getting a good support right out of the gate from both Democrats and Republicans.
Well, that's positive. What is the name of this bill? I may have missed it.
It's the Healthcare Workforce Resilience Act, or what we sometimes call the HWRA.
So it's similar to what we've talked about in the past, or is it really?
It's actually virtually identical. I think the only thing is they've changed a few dates on it.
So as somebody who's just, you know, I'm not involved in politics. I am just a citizen who is listening. Why is something like this not approved by Congress? It sounds almost silly. Why? There's obviously a nurse shortage. Why is there even, you know, without getting into too much politics, why is this not automatically just something that's considered and approved, Chris?
Yeah, so there's basically two broad reasons, I think. The first is, while this seems very urgent and necessary to me, Mike, to you, Danielle, to everybody listening here, in the grand scheme of American bills, this is just one out of 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 priorities. And the U.S. system is purposefully designed to be deliberative and slow. So it's just an institutional issue. I don't think it's a policy issue, at least respect to this one thing, at least the one reason why it's slow. I think the other issue is there's a nuance to this bill that is sometimes difficult to convey in just a few headlines or tweets or things like that. And there's been an enormous immigration discussion in the United States, in particular over the last 10 years since President Trump really came onto the scene. And so there's a segment of U.S. lawmakers who just do not believe in immigration. They would say things like, well, America should just be able to grow their own nurses. Now, the reality, of course, is it's also sort of impossible to make up the shortage because the nursing shortage is so bad. But again, already I'm starting, as I explained here, to get into nuances of the U.S. nursing shortage. And because for all these politicians, they might deal with this bill, and then tomorrow they're dealing with a farm bill. And then the day after that, they might be dealing with a U.S. military bill, and so on and so on and so on down the line. And so they just have a lot of priorities, and this is a difficult one to get up the radar screen. So I'm not predicting this will be passed. I'm not predicting this won't be passed, but I think it will be difficult. But I think the main takeaway is last week was a good week for this, in that we have at least taken one step down that pathway.
Okay. Well, thank you for the update, Chris. I think a lot of us are anxious and excited to hear where this goes, and our fingers are crossed for hopefully positive movement continuing down the path. So thank you for that update. Mike, let's turn to you. So we have a question from Harris, who says, why is the EB2 rest of world accelerating, yet EB3 rest of world is stagnant? What is EB2? And I don't know if you have a thought, but why is there movement in some categories and not others?
Well, the visa bulletin goes from EB1, EB2, EB3. And if you look at just those three categories, there are a smaller number of jobs and smaller number of people that qualify for EB1 and EB2 than EB3. So that, in simple, it's simply there are fewer numbers in those particular categories. Now, there are certain occupations in the healthcare space. EB2 would be, generally speaking, those individuals who have a master's or higher level education as the minimum education to get into that job. So, for example, OTs, PTs generally, physicians are going to fall under the EB2 category, whereas nurses, med techs, other occupations where a bachelor's is sufficient are going to fall under the EB3. And there are simply fewer of those other occupations in the EB2 category. So wherever there's a fewer number, they're going to go along faster or stay C, which is the current, which means that, like in the first category, that there is no line, there is no weight. So that it explains it.
So we have a question from Nestine. So Chris, I'm going to turn to you. Nestine says, what is the turnaround time for PWD after applying? So earlier, when we were talking about back to basics, you talked about Schedule A and a nurse not having to do a perm certification. Like, it's kind of related to this. Can you explain what is a PWD and how long does it take to get one?
Yeah. So before an employer is allowed to file your I-140, if you're a nurse or a physical therapist, the employer has to do something called to get it obtained from the U.S. Department of Labor, a PWD, which stands for a prevailing wage determination. Essentially, what the U.S. employer is doing is they're saying, we, the U.S. employer, would like to sponsor for a foreign nurse, or for that matter, a whole batch of foreign nurses. And those nurses are going to be in this job site, 123 Main Street, you know, Washington, D.C., or wherever the work site is. And so they describe the position, they describe the location, and it gets filed electronically. And, you know, it can take as short as 3 or 4 months, and it can take as long, we've seen, as long as 6 or 8 months. It sort of varies throughout the year, so that depending on the processing time. And then what the U.S. Department of Labor, they will say is, okay, that position, registered nurse, performing these job tasks at this location, they should earn a salary of $30 an hour U.S. or whatever the salary is. Once that's accomplished, then the U.S. employer actually has to notify U.S. workers of that there has been a PWD filed and certified, and that the employer still continues to want to move through that process. That takes another, call it 60 days roughly. And then, and only then, is the employer allowed to file for your I-140, which establishes your priority date. And so you can see it can take maybe 3 or 4 months, 5 months at the fastest, maybe as much as 9 or 10 or 11 months on the longest. That's all bad news, by the way. If you do apply with an employer who regularly files for international nurses, the employers usually have a PWD always certified, because they're looking 6 or 8 months into the future. The same employer typically has already been regularly giving notice to their U.S. workers. And so if you do have an employer who has that, then you can essentially cut out all that time, because it sort of happened before you were engaged with that employer, and you move right to the I-140 filing.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. So I see a lot of questions about predictions, about asking how things may change, how things will look. I have a question of my own. So Mike, I'm going to turn to you. How does this retrogression compare in terms of similarities and differences to prior retrogression that you saw? I think it must have been, what, in 08, 09, 2010, something around that?
Well, I can tell you about the 08, 09 ones. You have to turn to Chris to talk about the ones from 01 and 02 and 03, because he'll remember those better. It looks like we're settling in at around the 3-year mark right now, which is similar to what we had a couple times in the past. We have had some events that have impacted retrogression, whether those were economic events in the U.S. that curb the hiring of nurses, whether those were international medical events such as COVID that changed the demand and the supply on both sides and made things different. So we've had situations where we've had this in the past. This is not unusual. We had some legislative relief that Chris was instrumental in and helped draft and push through back in, I think it was 05 or 06, that gave us some relief for a few years, similar to what we're trying to push through now. So we haven't really had consistent retrogression for a long period of time, simply because there's been things that have intervened outside the control of anyone. But getting to this stage of 2.5-3 years is, in and of itself, is not unusual. We've certainly seen this historically. Keep in mind, on a broad scale, individuals from India are facing retrogression of 10 plus years, and that has been that way for 20 plus years. Individuals from China are facing retrogression for 5 to 7 years, and it's been that way for at least maybe the last 15 years. So the concept of retrogression as just a concept within the U.S. immigration system is not unusual, sadly.
Okay, so sounds like demand has outpaced supply in the past. We have seen this. We have dealt with this. Chris, anything to add on past retrogression?
Yeah, there wasn't much of a retrogression in 2000. So if we could go back 25 years, that would be good. But nothing else to add.
Hindsight's 2020. Okay, so with that, I think we are about at time. Thank you, Chris and Mike, for being on each month as usual, and especially for our breaking news on a Monday morning. I very much appreciate your time and your insight, always teaching me something new every month. So thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you to everybody who joined today. Thank you for your thoughtful questions. You all taught me a lot, and I appreciate that. And I look forward to our next show. I look forward to continue learning with all of you, and I look forward to hopefully seeing you in the United States very soon.